Hey, everybody. Tim, the Charlie Kirk Show. Peter Schweitzer joins us and Pedro Gonzalez. We talk about Biden. We talk about groomers and so much more. If you want to support our program directly, go to charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter, start a college chapter at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. I want to encourage you to support and check out Pedro Gonzalez's Substack. It's called Contra, contra.substack.com. Pedro is special, and he's unafraid, and he talks about issues that are so critical right now. And you guys got to support him at contra.substack.com. And he writes about things that really people are afraid of talking about. We're going to get right into that. Pedro, welcome back. Happy Friday.
Charlie, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate that intro.
Of course. All right, Pedro, let's get into this story you have here on your Substack. Groomers Online. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, it will sound eerily reminiscent to another story that was recently published in Town Hall about a couple of gay men who were also outspoken LGBT rights activists who sodomized their adopted children and produced child pornography. I mean, really, really heinous stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had actually covered a story that's kind of similar, but admittedly not nearly as bad. It's bad, but not that bad, last year while it was still developing. And so basically, the FBI uncovered a network of mostly gay men who are producing and distributing child pornography online using apps like Telegram and Kik. There's a whole aspect of online anonymity enabling this stuff. But the most disturbing element of the story is that several of the people that are involved in this that were in communication were teachers. So it actually started with a teacher in Philadelphia working at a private school. So don't think that this is a public school thing. This was a prestigious private school in Philadelphia. This teacher had worked there for nearly two decades. And Dropbox notified an organization that's in charge of kind of fielding complaints related to this sort of thing, which are then forwarded to law enforcement. So Dropbox flagged a file that had been uploaded that depicted two underage boys engaging in sexual acts. And so Dropbox ended up forwarding two IP logins for that connection to the FBI, and they traced it back to a school teacher at a private academy in Philadelphia who's in his 40s. And so actually while looking into him, that's when they uncovered that he had been actually talking to another teacher in Hawaii named Alden Bunag, and you may have heard of him because right before he was arrested, right after he was arrested, people noticed that he was a really outspoken LGBT rights advocate. He had attacked feminists who were anti-trans. He said that conservatives only use the term groomer because they are themselves grooming kids, and so they're projecting. I mean, like, really outrageous stuff, right? Well, it turns out that this guy in Hawaii, who had been a substitute teacher at a variety of different schools in Hawaii, had actually been having sex with a 13-year-old boy who he described to investigators as a former student. And he actually said in his online communications to the other teacher in Philadelphia that there had been times where he had sex with this boy during school lunch breaks. And he had been recording these encounters and sharing them online. He uploaded at least two of them online that this other teacher saw. And that's just the tip of the iceberg here. There was another teacher who has not been identified yet, or there's a third person who claims to be a teacher. The authorities only know him under his Telegram handle, which is Mr. Pickles, kind of odd. But this person also claims to be a teacher who's sexually attracted to his underage students.
And so to go back to the Atlanta story, we had Mia Cathwell from Town Hall on. This is extraordinary stuff, and you have the courage to kind of go through all this. Why is it that the media not just ignores this, but they're actively producing cover for this? Yeah. It's worse than ignoring it.
Because I think we have sacred people in our society, people that are basically beyond reproach, people whose lifestyles are not just beyond criticism, but in fact, we have to glorify them, right? It's kind of like we're all supposed to be subject to these kind of struggle sessions if we break party line on this. And in this case, it's specifically people who fall under the LGBTQ rainbow. And that story that took place in the Atlanta area suburbs, and this story that took place from Philadelphia to Hawaii, there was a third accomplice in New York, and we can talk more about the tactics they use, because part of the reason I wrote this is to actually inform parents on what to look out for because of how these people operated online. But everyone involved in both of these stories, they're gay men, which is, I mean, very obviously, this is like a group that you're not allowed to criticize in society today, right? And worst of all, in the Town Hall story and in my story, there's adopted children involved. The Philadelphia teacher, when the FBI executed a search warrant at his home in Roxboro, Philadelphia, which is considered, by the way, one of the safest, most family-friendly neighborhoods in Philadelphia. It's very quaint, very, you know, it's the perfect kind of place. I think that the motto is a place with roots, you know, just like the kind of the perfect place to raise kids. Well, not really, or at least in this case. But anyways, when the FBI showed up at his door, they found that he lives alone with a 6-month-old girl. And it's not clear. Local reporters have tried to figure out whether or not it's his biological daughter, but they know that he's not married and that he lives alone with her. So again, these kinds of stories are simply too explosive, because they kind of bring us back to a little problem called pattern recognition. That it seems like certain people tend to exhibit certain behavior, but you're not allowed to notice that. Or at least you're not allowed to notice red flags. Like the FBI noted that this Philadelphia teacher had tons of photographs that they described as non-pornographic, but they seemed to be taken while he was out chaperoning students during off-campus activities, because they all trusted him, right? The parents trusted him, the school trusted him, the students loved him. He earned everyone's trust. And enough so that he was able to take them on trips off campus, I think even overnight trips. And the FBI found that he had tons of photographs of his students, these boys, that were taken when the students weren't looking. And I mean, you put two and two together here, and the reality is that this guy was using his position of trust and influence to take these pictures that were not necessarily pornographic, but obviously fed into his fantasies about his students. And now as an adult, if you see that, you know, a guy who's taking pictures of young boys all the time when they're not looking, I mean, like, that's a red flag, right? But you're not supposed to say anything, because that red flag probably comes from a place of bigotry.
That's an important point. So if you have in your spirit and just common sense, if all of a sudden a pattern recognition is activated in your senses, the media and the current regime is telling you that you're actually bigoted and an awful person. This is a real, this is a deeper point. In some ways, the emphasis on trying to find bigotry where it doesn't exist is actually creating a more dangerous country for our kids.
Yes, absolutely. It's inevitably going to create more resentment, because simply put, if you say you're not allowed to ever criticize this group, it's going to make people resent that group. It just makes people hate each other. And it obviously, and arguably more importantly, it makes us all less safe.
It makes us less safe when all of a sudden you start to see a pattern recognition here. And look, I said this previously, which is, okay, I would love to see the media have the same sort of, it's a wish that will never be fulfilled, the same sort of enthusiasm and energy that they went after trying to take down the Catholic Church, that now we see a pattern that is emerging. And based on your reporting, Pedro, and based on Mia's reporting, the buried lead is the demand for this content. I'll be honest, I couldn't even read Mia's piece. I had to put it down. It's so sick. It's so horrific. I mean, and I'm going to talk to you about what I think should happen to them. I think the gallows would be merciful.
Yes.
But the demand is what really bothered me, because that all of a sudden goes to show there's not some one-off thing, that there's a market for this. Pedro, explain to our audience the disturbing and diabolical demand for child pornography.
Yeah, well, it is diabolical. I mean, it's just the worst stuff. For this story, I had to take a deep dive into court documents, and
man,
I wish I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I skim these articles, man. Like, it's just not good for your soul.
Yeah,
it's just.
Yeah.
And by the way, there is. I don't mean to interrupt you. There is documented evidence that the investigators in the FBI that are assigned child pornography cases are more likely to commit suicide and get like. I mean, it's just you can't.
I get it.
Like, it's really a sick thing. And my heart goes out for these investigators that are like living normal lives and they have to build cases around this. I'm sorry, Pedro, continue.
No, it's right. And you can kind of see in the criminal complaints and in the motions for pretrial detainment that the agents are fired up. You know, like they use the term, in one of the documents I read, they use the term or the phrase like-minded predators, like-minded child predators 3 times. It's really disgusting. And so the Philadelphia teacher at this private, again, prestigious private academy, he was a math teacher, he worked with an accomplice who was based out of New York but had gone to school in the South. An interesting character. There's not a whole lot of information on him, partly because he's of his age. The teacher in Philadelphia was in his 40s. This other person in New York was about 19 when he was arrested. They actually met because this teacher, again, in his 40s, had been posting erotic porno, like gay, basically fictional stories on a website called Nifty. And Nifty has been a hub for erotic LGBTQ fiction for a long time. And it's drawn controversy because users are not required to verify that they're over 18, and the site affords people complete anonymity. So basically a 13-year-old could post about it, or I guess more importantly, could read on the website, right? And access all of this different content. And that's actually how these two connected. The younger person in New York read some of the teacher's erotic fiction on this website and they got in touch there. I wasn't able to find it, probably for the better, but it makes you wonder, you know, what was he writing? And was he writing about fantasies involving his own students? We don't know, because again, it's really difficult to even figure out who's writing what on that website. And so these two came up with a plan to bait nudes, to produce child pornography, in other words, out of his own students. And so the way that they would do this was they would run through different social media accounts like Instagram and Snapchat, pretending to be girls. And the teacher in Philadelphia would send information about his own students to this other person in New York. Sometimes this person in New York would.
This is a whole network then.
Yeah.
This is a sophisticated operation.
Yes, it was. Actually, there was a spreadsheet involved.
Oh my God.
And so the idea was just to bait nudes out of underage boys, including this person's own students. And it got so Byzantine that at one point he developed a spreadsheet that he organized by age, by like, I think the success rate of whether or not they got something out of them going. I think it started with 6th graders. It just really disgusting stuff. Like they had like little kind of like slogans that they would use to celebrate when they actually baited someone, like got his D. Or got him is the like the language they would use to celebrate baiting his own students into sending them like videos of them doing stuff, like just really, really gross. And then another aspect of this was they would bait other underage boys who were gay because, you know, in this other case, these students at the school thought they were talking to basically teenage girls. Obviously, they weren't. These are men behind the app. But then in a separate scheme that they came up with using a social media app called the Kick, which again gives you a ton of anonymity, and for that reason it's drawn criticism because it doesn't require a phone, like you don't have to verify a phone number or an email to use it. And so through Kick, they started a group where in order for other underage boys to join it, they would have to basically send live sexually explicit content to them as kind of like your initiation into the group. Really disgusting stuff. And he was doing this, the teacher in Philadelphia, basically up until the moment that he got arrested. And when the FBI showed up at his door and they kind of asked, it's like a, you know, why I pulled you over moment, right? They asked him, do you know why we're here? And he said, it's because of my Dropbox, isn't it? And he acknowledged to the agents that his Dropbox had recently been closed because he violated terms of service related to pornography.
Unbelievable. I mean, as I said, the guillotine would be merciful to these people. Yes, someone said, well, Charlie, you know, you're a hypocrite because then you would have to, you know, would you be the executioner? Happily. I would happily be the executioner to these freaks. Pedro, thanks so much. Check out his Substack, contra.substack.com.
Thank you, Charlie.
There are some crimes so horrific, they're hard to even process. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow. Mike Lindell is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow Towels. Towels that work. I know it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set that includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code KIRK. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the Radio Listener Special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and have their 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Special and use promo code KIRK. That's MyPillow.com. Use promo code KIRK or call 800-875-0425. That is MyPillow.com, promo code KIRK.
The Biden story continues to grow and develop and deepen, but I think we're more confused than we are clear.
So joining us now is Peter Schweitzer, who is the foremost expert and researcher on all things Biden corruption. He is the president of the Government Accountability Institute and author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Red Handed. Peter, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Peter, your research is fabulous. It's impressive. It's thoughtful. And you really did a lot of work on it, obviously, and work that other people did not do. So I'm just going to kind of allow you to riff and to walk our audience through it. What do you think is going on with this Biden document scandal saga, and how, if at all, does it connect with the Biden crime syndicate's foreign deals?
Great question, Charlie. I mean, to me, the Biden document scandal is sort of the typical bureaucratic approach by which is basically avoiding the bigger scandal and going off on this little sort of technicality. So what do I mean? We have now known for quite some time, it's not been disputed, it's clear in corporate records, financial records from China and Hong Kong, elsewhere, that the Biden family got some $31 million from four Chinese businessmen, beginning when Joe Biden was vice president of the United States. And those four Chinese businessmen who gave these tens of millions of dollars to the Bidens all have links to the highest levels of Chinese intelligence. So one of them, who Hunter Biden on the laptop calls the super chairman, his name is Che Feng. At the same time he was pouring money into the coffers of the Biden family, was business partners with the vice minister of state security, with responsible for foreign espionage. I could go through the other three businessmen as well, but they have similar types of ties. This is a massive issue and a massive problem that the mainstream media has largely ignored, frankly, completely ignored. The Biden family does not dispute, does not want to discuss it. And now you have the document scandal erupt. And the issue is really over the handling of classified material. I'm not meaning to minimize this, Charlie, but from the standpoint of the larger scandals facing the Biden family, it is relatively minor. And my concern is that we will have Republicans and others sort of go off the trail on the documents, which does need to be investigated, but do it at the expense of this larger, more fundamental question, which is, why did the Bidens get tens of millions of dollars from these Chinese businessmen when they performed no discernible service? They provided no product.
Yes.
There's no evidence they did anything for the money. They didn't get the money for free. So the question is, what did they do for it? And that's what I think congressional investigators should be focused on.
So can you help me understand this rental refund payment from CEFC and then that allegedly got transferred to Joe Biden's rent? I have a personal theory on this, which is, and I'd love your take, that Joe Biden has been and is more involved in the details of Hunter Biden's finances than anyone ever wanted to acknowledge or admit. And Hunter Biden was so controlled by his father that he wanted to make sure that he could show his dad a dollar for dollar, one-to-one transfer, that he was not cloak and daggering the money at all. Like, Dad, see, it was $49,510 and you received $49,510. Am I reading too much into that?
It's very, very possible, Charlie. I mean, this story kind of evolves as more material comes up. But I think you're quite right. Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were more tied on these deals than they've acknowledged. And let's remember, Charlie, where this conversation started. In 2018, it was the first time that we exposed, that anybody exposed, the Biden's ties to the Chinese in 2018. And the Biden family response was, there were no deals. Hunter had no deals. That ended up not being true. That ended up being a lie. So then they switched to, well, Joe Biden had no knowledge of these deals. He never met with Hunter's business partners. The laptop came out and showed that that was demonstrably false. Now the fallback position has become, and it was sort of spun in a New York Times article last week, well, Joe and Hunter did not ever have joint bank accounts. So that's now become the standard to measure whether they were engaged in business together. It's very, very clear. Joe Biden met with his business partners. He knew what Hunter was doing. Hunter was riding in the wake of what Joe Biden did as vice president. Let's remember the two biggest countries where Hunter Biden got deals. He sets up a global financial consultancy with no experience in 2009. And the two biggest deals are in Ukraine and China, both of which happen to be the countries that Barack Obama appointed specifically and publicly.
Just, it's
Joe
a coincidence.
Biden,
I mean, come on, obviously, it's just a coincidence. I mean,
Joe
Biden didn't, he struggled to arrange business deals from Ghana. I don't know why.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
exactly. And Charlie, you know, it's like, where are the deals from London and Tokyo?
Yeah, exactly.
Berlin?
The actual financial centers. Yeah, the financial institutional non-American centers of industry, right? I mean, maybe could you just throw in a Zurich or a Luxembourg just to pretend like you're doing something legitimate?
Exactly. I mean, it's absurd. And so now we have this situation where the story continued to evolve with the laptop, where you saw very, very clearly in the emails, I talk about it in my book, the New York Post has reported on it, where Hunter Biden, while his father was vice president, was paying his father's bills. He was actually paying in 2014 and 2015, he was paying for renovations on that home in Delaware that we now know later have these classified documents. So the notion that Joe Biden didn't know about his son's business dealings, that he didn't benefit from them, is simply not true. And so the question now becomes, why did the story about these documents leak?
That is the operative question, yes.
Yeah. And look, I'm speculating here, okay? I don't know. I don't have any inside information. But I think a couple of things are going on. Number one, there is very real concern in the Democratic world about the investigations that are mounting on Capitol Hill. They don't look good. I think the second thing you have at work, Charlie, is politically, a lot of Democrats do not believe that Joe Biden is up to snuff mentally or physically for the 2024 campaign, and they want him out. They're looking for people like, let's say, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, or others to step in. The problem is Joe doesn't want to voluntarily step away, so they're giving him a gentle nudge. That's my theory on what is going on with these documents being leaked. It gives them sort of a middle ground technicality to convince Joe to not run, and it sort of takes off the table in terms of the 2024 campaign issues related to the family's foreign business dealings in China.
In some ways, it's a warning shot, right? It's kind of, hey, we're actually in charge. There is a deep state that is just going to remove you at our choosing. But I share your fear here, which is, will there ever be an actual robust investigation into the altering of U.S. policy for personal inurement? That right there, I mean, we have a big T word that should encompass that. And I'm not saying they did it, but they certainly loosely threw that around like a frisbee when Donald Trump was president. Treason. Yeah. But I'm not saying Joe Biden did it. I infer and I speculate it. But you have proven through your incredible research, tens of millions of dollars to a buffoon cokehead, let's just be honest, right, that has no business doing international business dealings at all. No services rendered. This guy's not exactly a hedge fund specialist, okay? Right. And then a father who all he had was access and basically a temporary position in government authority. Is that ever going to be investigated?
I hope so. I think we're hearing from Republicans on Capitol Hill that they are going to investigate it. I've been in communication with members of those committees. They certainly have my material and the documents that I have. And I do think this is vitally important, Charlie, because you kind of saw what the position of the Democrats and the mainstream media is going to be on the interview last weekend when Senator Ron Johnson was on NBC News. And Ron Johnson was asked, well, do you have any evidence that Hunter Biden committed a crime? You know, since when is that the standard of concern? I mean, was that the standard when it came to Donald Trump that, well, first we have to demonstrate that a crime's been committed? No, I mean, the very point of investigation is to figure out what went on. And what the Bidens did is the equivalent of during the Cold War, we're facing the evil empire of the Soviet Union, and Jimmy Carter's family, or God forbid, Ronald Reagan's family, took $30 million from Russian businessmen linked to the KGB. Now, who is going to say that that should not be investigated? And who's going to say, well, first we have to demonstrate that a crime was committed or we don't care? This is going to be the position of the mainstream media and of the Democrats, and it's a ridiculous standard. So my hope is that the members of Congress leading these committees are going to show fortitude. They are going to meticulously go through this as prosecutors would. In other words, subpoena the documents, get all those suspicious activity reports at the Treasury Department.
Yeah, which
there's more than 150 of them. And let's be clear, Charlie, those suspicious activity reports, they're flagged by the Treasury Department when they are concerned that money is being laundered by either criminal organizations or terrorist organizations.
Right.
They've got 150 of them.
Could you just imagine maybe around the 85th unusual, just like whoever's running that desk at Treasury. Hey, Earl, we got another one. I know. How about 104? Hey, Pam, what am I supposed to do here? We flagged another one. I mean, how around the 118th suspicious wire transfer?
It's ridiculous. Charlie, the average businessman who's doing international business deals, you know,
they might
will
get
not
one a
get
decade.
One of these in a, exactly.
And usually, talking to people that have dealt with CFIUS and with this, it's usually cleared up because it's a mistake, but it's taken very seriously. Usually you get like a call from the DOJ, like, we're coming to your office tomorrow, and eight guys in suits show up. They say, what is this for? You know, it's very serious, and it's money that's usually – it's not flowing from London, Tokyo, or Zurich. I don't know. It's usually from Tehran or from some other clandestine third world country on the seven, countries that we're not allowed to do business with. Rents are soaring at unprecedented highs. If you're renting or have a friend or family member that is, now is a great time to make the move to homeownership. Look, you gotta own. Renting, that's great reset stuff. Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific Mortgage have helped so many people make that leap from renting to owning, with lots of programs that offer first-time buyers assistance with little to no down payment needed. I encourage you right now to visit my buddies, their website. They're great guys. They're Christians. They're conservatives. They love the Lord. AndrewandTodd.com right now. The thing I love about these guys is it's not about the transaction. They're helping you create a plan to help you reach your goals. Give them a call or go to their website, AndrewandTodd.com. With today's still historically low interest rates, it's easier than you think to become a homeowner. I've relied on them, and producer Andrew has as well. I highly recommend you take action now. And if you know someone paying rent, tell them about Andrew and Todd. Go to AndrewandTodd.com and tell them the Charlie Kirk Show sent you. I want to find this piece of tape here. It was in our open. It was Larry Summers. Our team will find it. But he was basically, yeah, here it is. Okay, this is Obama's economic. It was Summers. Didn't Summers run Harvard at some point?
Yeah,
he did. Yeah. Okay, he failed miserably there. Play cut 105.
It would be an enormous and staggering error for the United States to decide that it was its policy to try to suppress Chinese economic growth in the name of our national security. An enormous and staggering error to decide that.
Now, Peter, this is somewhat incorporates our Biden conversation, but I when I hear someone talk like that, I know this sounds so cynical. I immediately think, like, how much are you getting paid? Like, I don't think he actually believes this.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And in Larry Summers' case, I haven't looked at him specifically. But look at the circles that he swims in. Look at the business that he's in, which is finance, Wall Street, economic forecasting. And for the biggest players on Wall Street, China is where the financial action is. Bridgewater Associates is the biggest hedge fund in the world. And Ray Dalio, the head of Bridgewater Associates, sings the praises of Beijing. I mean, he calls the guy who was President Xi's enforcer. This is the guy that would throw people in jail and disappear them. In one of his books in 2018, he calls him this guiding light that is a remarkable force for good on the global stage, and somebody who Ray Dalio has learned so much from. It's a stunning thing. Jeez. The Economist calls the same guy the most feared man in China because he throws people in jail. So why would Ray Dalio, this titan on Wall Street, do that? Well, about a year after that book came out, his company, Bridgewater, became the first Western hedge fund to be able to offer its products in China.
Of course.
That's what selling your soul looks like. And Ray Dalio is not alone. So unfortunately, these are the people that hire Larry Summers and people like him to be consultants.
I want to know how many Aspen mansions were made possible thanks to the selling out of our national security and the integrity of our institutions. My guess would be thousands. So let's just kind of put a bow on this. How do you see this then playing out? Because a concern I do have is just a longer-term constitutional concern that the bureaucrats just basically call the shots. I mean, I'm no fan of Joe Biden, but I am not a fan of this kind of deep state maneuvering, fourth branch of government, paper shuffling, especially if there's a negotiation bargain where we're supposed to believe that the paperwork is the high crime and misdemeanor, when in reality, they were playing a game that has civilizational implications.
Yeah, it's an enormous problem, Charlie. You've talked about it. Other people have talked about it. But this attitude within government bureaucrats is profound. Mm-hmm. There was a book I just recently read by two scholars at Johns Hopkins University. They did a survey of more than 2,500 senior executive service people in the federal government, and they asked them a series of questions. One of them was, if there is a policy that a popularly elected president wants to pursue that's constitutional and that you disagree with, would you resist and try to undermine that policy? More than 60% of these unelected bureaucrats said yes, they would.
Unbelievable.
So they don't feel like they're accountable. They don't care the fact that they're not elected. We have got to strip government of power. And I will say, Charlie, that, you know, as somebody who's been sort of disagreeing and battling with the left for decades, I'm starting to see a few glimmers of hope of certain people on the left, certainly not the majority, who realize this monster that they have created.
The Leviathan. Yeah.
Yes. Because their solution to everything, Charlie, has always been more government, more government, more government. And now they realize they don't control it anymore. So there's got to be in this country a reckoning, and we're going to have to make a choice whether we truly want to be a representative government or whether we are comfortable meandering into essentially an authoritarian arrangement where unelected people make the majority of decisions that affect our lives.
No, I will enjoy from afar, you know, Joe Biden having to scrap for political relevancy and stay out of prison, while simultaneously being struck with horror that somebody I don't know, that I can't hold accountable, that I never voted for, is actually doing that. That's not healthy. it's not sustainable, and regardless of your political affiliation, we should not put up with it. Peter, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.